This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to The Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting for financial security for our seniors. Find out more at carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. Finally, a United Nations body releases a report which states there are reasonable grounds to believe that Hamas committed rape and sexual abuse during its murderous rampage on October the 7th. And Mildred's Mindset, tips for a happy and active life at the age of 100. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. Statistics Canada recently reported that there are now more millennials than baby boomers in the country. Well, now there is another report that finds that they are poised to become the richest generation in history. According to global property consultants Knight Frank, millennials will inherit about $90 trillion in assets over the next 20 years. If you're sedentary most of the day, you can still benefit from counting steps, and you may need fewer than your active counterparts in order to lower the risk of disease and early death. 10,000 is usually the magic number, but according to the British Journal of Sports Medicine, for those who are not active, getting 9,000 steps a day lowered the risk of developing cardiovascular disease by 21% and the odds of dying by 39%. You're considered sedentary if you get less than 5,000 steps a day. It was a strange medical mission. A 62-year-old German man deliberately got 217 COVID-19 vaccine shots in the span of 29 months, going against national vaccine recommendations. That made him a walking experiment for what happens to the immune system when it is vaccinated against the same pathogen repeatedly. The conclusion was published in The Lancet Infectious Diseases, which said that while his hypervaccination did not result in any adverse health effects, it also did not significantly improve or worsen his immune response. 40 years ago, he was given 6 months to live. Now, Bert Janssen of the Netherlands has been recognized as the world's longest surviving transplant patient. As a teenager, Janssen was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, a disease that makes it harder for the heart to pump blood around the body. He received a heart transplant in 1984. Guinness World Records has officially recognized his achievement of living 39 years and 100 days after a transplant. A Canadian, Harold Sokirka, set the previous record 34 years and 359 days. This year's Pritzker Prize, often called the Nobel Prize of Architecture, goes to Riken Yamamoto of Japan. The 71-year-old is renowned for designs that emphasize community and connectivity. Across a five-decade career, Yamamoto has dedicated his work to fostering community in ever-expanding cities, calling social isolation a concern for both architects and urban planners. His designs favor glass walls and ceilings, soaring windows, and green space. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. This week, the United Nations envoy on sex crimes during conflict presented a report concluding that rape and gang rape likely occurred during the October 7th Hamas attack in southern Israel. It also found clear and convincing evidence that hostages were raped while being held in Gaza and that those currently held are still facing abuse. The UN was late to acknowledge these crimes, and the fact-finding mission leading to the report took place largely because of the efforts of Professor Ruth Halperin Kadari, director of the Rackman Center for the Advancement of the Status of Women at Bar-Ilan University, And she's also an international women's rights advocate. I spoke to her when she was in town earlier this week. We were also shocked about both the attack, but the sexual violence. What was your first reaction to it?
At first, I found it really hard to believe because I never imagined that fate of women in other parts of the world, to which I was exposed to during my 12 years on the UN Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, women in Bosnia, in Rwanda, in Syria, Iraq, Yazidi women, that same fate would actually become part of the fate of Israeli women. But I realized that human cruelty can go beyond imagination and that we are facing an enemy that has absolutely no limits. And our role is to expose the truth and to tell the world this had really happened.
There was so much evidence. What was your reaction that people were actually denying this?
That was also beyond comprehension. The atrocities committed by Hamas on October 7 were probably the most recorded crime, war crime, crime against humanity in world history. They broadcasted everything that they did in real time and put it on social media and sent it to families of the victims. And then just one day afterwards, together with their allies, the Islamic Republic of Islamic regime of Iran and Russia, they engaged in deleting all these evidence, the footage and the photographs, and started the most sinister campaign of denial. And unfortunately, a lot of people who have difficulties in changing their mind frame and in realizing that the organization, the terror organization that purports to be the representative of the Palestinian people, that they had indeed committed these crimes and that Israel had been a victim to the most horrific crime possible.
Do you think that a lot of that denial was because of anti-Semitism?
I think it has to do with anti-Semitism. It has to do with the double standard that so many within the international human rights community and also among UN agencies, the double standard that they hold against Israel. But there had also been some difficulties in having evidence because of the satanic plan of Hamas to leave no living survivors. The vast majority of the victims who had been assaulted were murdered immediately after or even during the sexual assault, and thus they were silenced forever. But we have no way of collaborating with this plan to keep silence. We have to be the voice for those victims who were silenced forever.
You've mentioned the bias against Israel at many UN agencies. So what made you decide to try to take them on and convincing, and how did that go?
I believe that by keeping silent or by their delayed, very, very delayed response, they not only failed Israel and Israeli women, they failed the whole humanity. I believe that they really worked against their duty and their obligation. And being part of the international human rights community as a past former vice president of the CEDAW committee, I felt this was my role to call them to order and to call them to fulfill their obligation to protect and to promote the human rights of all women of the whole world, and this was and still is not a difficult task, but I do have to point out that the United Nations is not one monolithic institute, and there are several agencies within the United Nations who are able to hold a more complex and nuanced understanding of the reality. And one such agency, as you mentioned at the beginning, is the Special Representative of the Secretary General on Sexual Violence in Conflict, Ms. Pramela Patten, whose report on her fact-finding mission to Israel that was conducted just last month. And I had the privilege of also accompanying her during that visit. And I truly believe that after this report is being published, it will no longer be possible for anybody to claim that it did not happen.
So in order to get her to undertake that fact-finding mission, was it just a matter of you dealing with her, or did you have to go through layers of bureaucracy? I just want to get a sense of how it happened.
This was, of course, a formal visit. She was formally invited by the government of Israel through the Secretary General, and it had to go through all the formal and diplomatic channels and venues. And the main findings of this report will be included in the annual report of the Secretary General that will be published in March, the annual report on 2023, that always has a section on sexual violence in conflict. And the Secretary General, too, realized that it will be simply impossible to publish such a report on 2023 without addressing October 7 and the sexual violence that was committed by Hamas against Israel on that day.
Thank you so much, Professor Ruth Halperin Kadari. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
That was international women's rights advocate Professor Ruth Halperin Kadari. She was instrumental in convincing the UN envoy to undertake a fact-finding mission on sex crimes by Hamas. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, Mildred's Mindset, tips on living to 100 from a sassy centenarian.
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, bringing you vital information to boost your health, your finances, and your rights. Find out more at carp.ca.
This is my friend Mildred. She is not old.
I'm the hottest piece of ass in my retirement home.
And today we're celebrating her 100th.
That's a birthday song for social media star Mildred Kirschenbaum's 100th birthday. She's been an online sensation since her 99th, when her daughter posted a video with her tips on living to 100. They were so popular that she wrote a book, and I spoke with her ahead of the launch. Mildred Kirschenbaum, nice to meet you.
Same here, Libby.
It all started when your daughter posted on Instagram when she asked you what it was like to turn 99. So what was it like?
I really didn't even think about it. I'm giving you an honest answer. I didn't think about it. I went about my business as if I was 39. I was able to do it. I mean, it was my attitude.
And what is your attitude?
It's only a number. Live your life to the fullest. And that's what I'm doing. I even bought a car. And the salesman says the first time in his life, he sold the car to someone who's 100.
What kind of a car did you buy?
I don't think you want me to share that.
Okay. I'm sure it's a nice car. That's great. And your driver's license, do you still have it?
Of course. What would I do with a car without a driver's license?
I don't know, get a chauffeur or something. So what is your top tip for keeping a good attitude?
You know the expression Monday morning quarterback?
Yep.
You can't go through life that way. Your attitude has to be different. You don't get anything out of screaming and yelling except hurting yourself.
How do you maintain a good attitude?
I just do. I've trained myself to maintain a good attitude. You know, life is like a roller coaster. Some of us go on an easy roller coaster, and some of us are subject to something like a cyclone. And you have to have a good attitude. If you fall down, you have to pick up the pieces and get up and go ahead. You can't stay home and say, my children never call me, and get angry. Call them. Have a good attitude. In the long run, you will be happier, and that's the important thing.
You always seem to be making new friends. How do you do that at the age of 100?
It's not friends, it's acquaintances. It's very easy to make acquaintances. Or friends are far and few between, but acquaintances are easy to make, whether you're in a bar, whether you're playing Mahjong, Canasta, Bridge. There's always someone new there. And so we talk to each other.
How do you strike up a conversation?
Well, at a bar, it's easy. I sit down and I'm sitting at the bar, and there's a young gentleman next to me. And I'll say, look, I'm 99. I'm not looking to pick you up. You want to talk?
That's pretty direct.
We talked. And when he got through, he said, I enjoyed every minute, but I must go now. I have to pick up my wife.
You make many new acquaintances, right?
Yes, I do. I love going out with my daughter. The two of us make a very good... She likes to talk to people, and I do. I have one particular friend who I go with for a long time. And with her, I have to be careful, because if you're at the bar and I'm talking to you, her feelings are hurt, so I don't. But when I'm with my daughter, I could talk to anyone I want. She could talk to anyone she wants, and it's fine.
You spend a lot of time with her, right?
Well, she lives in New York, and I live in Florida. So when she comes down to Florida for a few months at a time, we do. And we sort of agree on where we want to go. Or it's like, you know, I could put it in one sentence. She'll say, what do you want to eat tonight? I'll say anything. She says, me too. But we have to make a decision.
That's it. Now, you said that at the age of 99, you realized that you had been mean to your daughter. How did that happen? Tell me about that.
Well, when she was little, she was a PA. You know what that means?
I can guess.
She was an artist born with her own mind. She came out with her own mind. And I wasn't as tolerant as I should have been. And I realized it. So I apologized to her. She forgave me a long time ago. But I forgave myself. And I told it to her.
And how come it took you until the age of 99?
I don't know. I didn't want to have any regrets when I died.
And did that change things in your relationship?
No, because she had forgiven me before.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, you know what? I often say to Gail, we're like a married couple. I was that way with my husband, too. We argued, but we never went to bed angry. We said what we have to, and the next thing was, do you want salad with your dinner? You want to go out? We never go to bed angry. You go to bed angry, you're angry the first night, you're really angry the second, the third you want a divorce, the fourth you don't even know what you're angry about.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You were married for what, 64 years?
Yes, because in my day, if you wanted sex, you got married. I missed all the fun in life.
Doesn't sound like it. What are some of your other tips for people who want to live to be 100?
Know your body. That's the big one. My body will tell me what I can't eat. Absolutely.
Anything else? What else do you have to know to live to 100?
Oh, you know who gave me that privilege? Right now I'm sitting here and I'm pointing my finger upwards to the sky. He's the one who gave it to me.
It's your genes.
And I'm not abusing it.
Ah, that's interesting. So what is it that keeps you going?
The world. Look out. It's such a beautiful world. Why do I want to leave it? If it rains, there's a rainbow. If it's sunny, it's beautiful.
Sounds good. Mildred, thank you very much for that.
It was my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was 100-year-old social media star Mildred Kirschenbaum.
And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. With technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer, Moses Znaimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.